Kreisky-Forum Talks, der Podcast zur Stunde.
Ihr Kreisky.
Hello and welcome to this talk in the wonderful dining and living room of Bruno Kreisky with Noa Landau. She is the deputy editor-in-chief of Haaretz, an important medium in Israel, and she's joining us today, and I'm really looking forward to hear about what is going on in Israel. So we see there are at the moment celebrations. Israelis are celebrating the 75th anniversary. But on the other hand, we are witnesses of a decisive moment in the history, because for weeks now there are protests against this judicial overhaul, against this reform proposed by the right-wing government of Benjamin Netanyahu. So, Noa, why is it now such a decisive moment in the history of the country?
Thank you, Alexandra, and I'm happy to be here at the Bruno Kreisky Forum. What we are seeing now in Israel is that the most far-right government, the most extreme, the most religious government that we ever had in our history, and that's not just me saying, that's also the right-wing saying, you know, that they now have finally the most right-wing government in history, has started its term with one main mission, which is the so-called judicial reform, which basically means that they want to let the executive branch have more power, for example, in the selection of judges. This is something that they're doing mainly because they want to see the courts rule lean less to the liberal point of view, and for example, prefer nationalistic rulings in favor of, for example, rulings that are based on human rights. And we see that a lot of people on the streets are going out and demonstrating against it week after week, much more people than we thought, with much more energy. They're very determined to fight this judicial overhaul. So this is basically where we're at the 75th anniversary of Israel.
Israel is now in a really important situation and in a very tough one. And what I, from my background visiting Israel a few weeks ago, what I see is that even Israelis who were not very active in the last few years when it comes to politics, they are now heavily engaged. Every weekend they decide to protest and be quite active in their way of dealing with this so-called reform. So what does it mean for this kind of activism in Israel?
Definitely, I think you're right. One of the things that we're seeing now more than ever is that more and more people that didn't used to be on the streets or take such a political stand are coming out. And basically we see that a wider liberal democratic, I wouldn't say progressive, it's a more center liberal leaning camp, is forming in a way that wasn't there before. There is this awakening, a political awakening amongst people who understand that if they keep being silent, this country is going to shift in a direction that they don't really want to see. So I think you're right. This is a moment where you see that people are suddenly waking up as activists that they weren't before, taking the streets in a very energetic kind of way. You said, you know, people are coming out every week. They are, and they're in growing numbers, but also the energy, the way, you know, that they are blocking the roads, etc. There's a lot of energy there. It's, of course, a question, where does it go politically, you know? How does this great energy on the streets then translate itself in the political sphere, which is yet to be seen?
On the other hand, you see a very active president, Isaac Herzog, tries to broker a deal to find a form of solution. Do you think that there is a chance to find a way out of this constitutional crisis?
So most people who are taking the streets, the protest movement actually opposes any kind of compromise on democracy, because you can't have half democracy and still call it a democracy. So a lot of people, I think, on the protest movement are pretty skeptical of this presidential initiative. The only, I think, way and reason that the opposition is supporting it, and also not all the oppositions, because some of the parties already withdrew from the conversations at the president's house. So Labour withdrew, and some parties weren't there to begin with, like Lieberman. But some of the parties that are still there, led by the center-leaning party of Benny Gantz, they basically, I think, are using it more as a tactic, you know, to just see if we can calm a little bit the situation, say that we're negotiating, and then see where that will lead us. But of course, I think the vast majority of the people who are on the streets, at least, feel like there is no real compromise that can be reached. They want a full stop for this plan to take over the judiciary, and that's their goal. There are a lot of other parts in the country that do think that maybe there is some kind of compromise that could be achieved, and we'll see.
And when it comes to these plans, one might consider, well, there is a very personal motivation behind, because Benjamin Netanyahu, who heads again the government in this country, he has also under investigation and standing in a trial because of corruption. And one part of this so-called reform is that he might, even after the final decision of the court, he can still be active as a politician, as a prime minister. So, there are also other ministers who have sentenced before a trial, a court. So there is also a clear personal motivation behind these plans.
Yes, so you see that there's a very dangerous combination here between the personal interests, which, you know, as you said, there is a prime minister who's on trial, at least one of his ministers has problems now with the law. And then you see that these personal interests kind of combine also with ideological reasons, because the coalition partners who are from the far right, even if they don't have that specific, you know, personal reason to take over the judiciary, they have ideological reasons to do so. Because what they want is to see the courts make rulings that are less liberal-leaning. They want the courts to take into consideration the nationalistic arguments more than, for example, human rights, which is considered a liberal idea. So they want to change the courts ideologically. And then when, you know, this is combined with some of the personal interests of the other partners in government, such as the prime minister and one of his ministers, that's a very risky combination.
And you mentioned already that Israel is having now the government, which is the rightest one in history. You explained more about the ideological background. what can be expected when it comes to the Israeli-Palestinian issue? Because clearly some of the right-wing parties are interested in settlements, in progress in this respect. So what does it mean for the whole so-called peace process?
Yes, you know, a peace process hasn't been, you know, viable for a long time now. We didn't really have a peace process. But in terms of what could happen on the ground, I'm quite afraid. I think the situation is very risky. We just saw, you know, that during the Jewish holiday of Pesach and the Muslim holiday of Ramadan, for example, it was a very tense time where some of the leading politicians in the government thought it would be a good idea to maybe visit Temple Mount, which in the end they didn't do, etc. So it's a very delicate moment, and I think, you know, of course we will see a lot of clashes, and the situation could be very tense. But on the other hand, if we want to be philosophical about it, and I'm saying this with a grain of salt, some of the voters of this very right-wing government are actually noticing that sometimes populism doesn't really deliver what it promised. This right-wing government has promised a lot of very extreme measures to deal with the Palestinians, and they now see, when they are in the government, that they can't actually do anything. They can challenge the international law, but they can't, like one of the ministers said, erase a whole Palestinian village. So, I mean, fortunately, you know, because we're still a country within the international wider community, there are limits to what the Israeli government could do. So some of the voters are suddenly realizing that maybe, you know, all these extreme right promises are populism that doesn't really have, you know, coverage, that they can't really deliver on.
So a reality check.
Something like that, yes. But still, it would be a very risky period in our country's history.
And there is one minister, Smotrich, who said during a visit in Paris, there aren't any Palestinians, so
they don't have any rights.
Right, so Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir, for example, are the more ideological far-right parts of this coalition. And they, of course, envision, you know, a Jewish, even religious state in their view. Smotrich is the Minister of Finance. He said that his economical plan is to follow God's ways. That's not very reassuring to anyone. The economical situation. Every statement he makes about the economical situation, he says, God willing, which is, you know, for many of Israel's secular citizens, also is not very reassuring. So yes, these people are very ideological, and they want to see a Jewish country in the nationalist sense of it.
And what is the role of the United States? You have worked for many years as a diplomatic correspondent for Haaretz. You have been part of the delegation. You witnessed it, meetings between the US government and Benjamin Netanyahu several times. So do you think that the US administration with Joe Biden has a different approach, or aren't they interested anymore in the Middle East issue?
It's a good question. I think, you know, the Biden administration basically has three problems now: China, 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 and now it's Russia, Russia, Russia also. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's pretty obvious that Israel and Palestine are not the first task, you know, on his desk. But still, the United States and also the rest of the international community, the European Union and member countries, have a lot of, they have a very important role in keeping Israel in check. You call it, you know, a reality check. I still think that the international community has a role to play in this situation, in keeping this very extreme government in some kind of line.
But what can and what should the Europeans do?
So it depends. Are we talking about the institutions or just individuals? You know, regarding just individual citizens, it's always, you know, for example, with everything that's been happening with the Ukraine and Russia, you see a lot of civil activity on the ground. People who care have an opinion, they voice it, they engage in all sorts of, you know, initiatives. I think, you know, the same could be done with people who really care about what's happening in Israel and Palestine. You can still engage in a lot of civil activities and show that, you know, you support the cause. I think it's also quite important now for liberals in Israel to see that there is that kind of support, that they're not alone, that there are others in the world that still care about this cause. Although, you know, we know that this has been going on for so long. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict, you know, sounds like one of these things that will never be resolved and everyone, you know, are getting tired of, but it's still so important for us on the ground to see that someone is still engaged. And from the point of view of the institutions and, you know, international involvement and pressures, I think that when the international community really cares about something, they know how to achieve their goal. And I'll give you an example. You probably followed when you were covering events, the affair of Khan el-Ahmar, this right. Palestinian village that mm-hmm. Israel is threatening to, you know, evacuate for forever now.
So Bedouins living in the hills next to Jerusalem, yeah.
Yes, and there is a decision by the Israeli court that they can actually do. They can actually deport these people, and it's a whole, of course, political struggle on the ground. But we saw that when Europeans and specifically Germany cared about this, then they, you know, they brought all their pressure into the picture to make sure that this village still exists, and it does. We now have the most extreme right-wing government, and it's a joke already in Israel that they can't even, you know, deal with the Khan el-Ahmar affair.
Mm. But this was a very specific event when it comes to the broader picture. The impressions is, well, the European politicians, they still insist on, well, talking with Netanyahu and telling him, well, we are in favor of a two-state solution, but on a practical level, they are not highly involved.
You know, in the end, there's also, it's also important to have these symbolic gestures. You know, even you say that they keep saying that they support the two-state solution, but not saying it is even worse. Mm. You need to keep alive these symbols, even if they're not really pragmatic at the moment. Because, how do you say in German, Zeitgeist? Mm-hmm. There's always a moment in time where suddenly it is relevant. And then you have to keep this idea alive for that time when it will be relevant. Because I think if the international community and Europeans, for example, they stop saying, you know, we support the institution just because it feels like it has no meaning, then really it will have no meaning.
When we broaden the perspective to the whole region, in recent weeks, we saw something very spectacular that China has brokered a deal between Iran and Saudi Arabia, quite successful, and nobody even knew that they were negotiating behind the scenes. So what does it mean for the whole region that now Beijing is an active political, not only economic, in an economic sense, player in that region?
Well, it means a lot of things. First of all, in Israel, not everyone thinks that the fact that the Saudis and Iran made a deal necessarily means that it can't also have a future deal maybe with Israel, which is, there's a lot of question marks around it. Does really a Saudi-Israeli deal is even possible? But the Americans definitely want it, and they're also trying to use it as a leverage on Netanyahu. So it doesn't necessarily mean that that's not possible because of that deal. In terms of China, I'm conflicted. On one hand, I tell myself, you know, maybe if the Chinese could move in and solve our problem, then, you know, I'm totally for it, you know. Let Beijing, solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict that no one else could. But on the other hand, of course, it has a meaning on the wider global picture when an anti-liberal force such as China comes into the picture and becomes a massive player, because China doesn't care about the international law. China doesn't care about the shared institutions and values of the liberal democratic world. So what does it mean, you know, on the future of the more global arena?
But Beijing really said, well, we could try to broker a deal between Palestinians and Israelis, and there were also a delegation in Jerusalem and trying to speak also in Ramallah to the other side. So at least they try to do something which is more than at least on an official level, what the Europeans and the Americans do at the moment.
I don't know. It's yet to be seen. I mean, the Chinese are saying things mostly. Mm-hmm. They're not really involved in the region in that kind of way. And I think the Europeans and the Americans still have, they've invested a lot also in, you know, in the knowledge and the tradition of all the knowledge they've accumulated about this region, which I'm not sure that the Chinese do. So we'll see how effective they will be, if at all they will step into that to that conflict.
And we've started our talk looking at the 75th anniversary of Israel. So I think it's difficult to make a prediction from decades in the future, but what do you think will be in the foreseeable future? What will happen in Israel?
Yeah. So, you know, journalists are journalists are horrible
country.
Prophets. If you read the American press before Trump, you had no idea he's going to be president. Mm-hmm. British press before Brexit, also horrible prophets. I'm not going to give a prophecy. But I do think that going back to the beginning of the conversation, this is really a pivotal moment. This is where we can go this way or this way for the next 75 years. We can be a nationalist state, or we could still keep that vision of a liberal-leaning country, you know, as much as it is. And this is when I think that this is a crucial time for that decision for the next 75 years.
Internally for Israel, yes. And what does it mean for the Palestinians? Is there still a chance for a two-state solution or other options, which are, of course, also in discussion, like a one-state solution?
So a lot of my Palestinian friends, they tell me, you know, what do we care if Israel sees itself as a democracy or not, as long as, you know, the occupation still exists? A lot of my Palestinian friends who are citizens of Israel, they don't really join these demonstrations because they tell themselves, you know, this is a Jewish problem. If they want to, you know, this is democracies for Jews. So they want to they want now to protect and defend their own democracy, which doesn't apply to us. And I fully understand this, but as I said, I think there is still a bad situation could always be worse. And it's true that the Supreme Court of Israel does not defend rights of Palestinians as it should. I have a lot of criticism on the Supreme Court of Israel from a left-wing perspective, that they could have do more. And they, in many senses, they're upholding, you know, the system of the occupation, maintaining it. But I think it could still be worse. It could still be worse for individuals. For example, if you can appeal to the Supreme Court, not as the Palestinian people, but as a Palestinian person, then the situation could maybe be for you worse. And I think we should always think about the life also of individuals. You know, saying, you know, it's Lenin's perspective that maybe when it's really worse, then things will be good. But it means that some people will live worse lives because of it. So I'm not sure, you know, that's a good idea. I think we should still, you know, I think that for a two-state solution, which I still believe is the best solution, we still need people in Israel that want a more democratic, liberal country. We still need those people to succeed in their fight over the institutions to make that happen in the future, even if right now it doesn't seem possible.
But don't you need also people on the other side willing to deal with the situation, to negotiate, because we see, President Mahmoud Abbas, he is more than 80 years old. Nobody knows who will succeed him, so must be two partners to deal with each other.
Yeah, the situation is not ideal on the Palestinian side either. That's why I feel, you know, it's probably not the moment in history where it will happen. That's clear. But how do we prepare that moment in the future when it will be possible? Mm. So I think that, of course, you need on both sides to have that, you know, next generation with these ideas that will lead us to where we want to be. And you need to build, it's the long game. It's not, you know, for tomorrow. Although things could happen also, you know, sometimes in history without explanation. That happens also, you know, just in one sudden moment in history. I don't know, the Berlin Wall. But most of the time it's a process. And we need to keep believing in this process.
And do you think that there are this kind of new leaders on both sides?
I think there are. I think there are very interesting ideas. We also see now, among Palestinian activists, there's a new generation with new ideas. You see in Ramallah people, you know, are thinking about these issues differently. And we also see within Israel, for example, this protest movement that, as I said, is not quite progressive or left-leaning. It's more center-liberal-leaning. But you see that there are younger people within that group that want to pull the protest to the left. And they do speak about the occupation, and they do care about it. And inside the demonstration, they have their own smaller demonstration that keeps reminding to the wider crowd that it's not only about democracy for Jews, it's about the fact that there is no democracy with occupation. That's actually the signs that they're holding. So I think on both sides, there are people who could be those potential future leaders.
So quite an optimistic
outlook. I have to be. I have to be optimistic.
Thank you for your insight views.
Thank you, Alexandra.